The dirt bike's engine revved to a frenzied scream. Then the human Chi-Chi mech mounted on it, let go the brake, and let in the clutch. The bike shot away across the hard-packed earth of the Littleville's plaza. The captured Scabby, tied to the pole behind it, screamed louder than the engine as his intestines were unreeled from his slit-open belly behind it. Glistening greasily in the light of a great central bonfire and numerous torches, the gut stretched out until the tie that fastened one end to the license holder snapped. Then it dropped into the dust, recoiling slightly with natural elasticity. Several figures with matted hair that trailed red stains of fresh blood down their faces, shoulders, and torsos came forward to inspect it as the disemboweled man howled and writhed. Next to the drawn-out viscera lay three similar strands, whose erstwhile owners had mercifully bled out and expired.
Damn, but I can't get over how much gut a person's got inside him.
Forgive me if I fail to share a sporting interest in this particular diversion.
Just taking stock of the situation.
The ville was small, no more than 20 or 30 small square adobe huts, scattered in a low spot where a stream that had been running underground emerged for a quarter mile or so, before going subterranean again. There were at least 100 Chi-Chi mechs, human and mutie, ranged around the plaza on the settlement's south side, squatting on their haunches, drinking from clay pots, and eating. Apparently, the rumors Doc had heard about the intruders eating their dead weren't lies. At least as many dead Chi-Chi mechs were stacked off on the east side of the plaza, to Ryan and Doc's right. The smell of death and rotting bodies was as thick as cheese.
What about our friends?
Still where we first spotted them, Doc. Tied to some poles over to the right and back away from the main action.
How do they look?
Hard to tell in this light, with a bitty little glass like this. They've been beat, maybe medium tenderized. Don't reckon anything's broke.
You do not feel perhaps a certain amount of expedition, haste even, might be in order?
Relax. Still got a dozen or so prisoners to play with. Obviously, JB and Jack are being saved for something special. From the looks of things, the Chi-Chi mechs will be hours before they get to them.
You have worked out a way to slip up to them in the excitement and cut them loose, of course.
They're too much out in the open. There's too much coming and going. I think the raiders may have some captured local women stashed in that hut, maybe 20 yards back of them. Traffic seems pretty regular between there and the plaza. We're gonna need a diversion.
May one hope that it might entail standing off at a goodly distance, doing something to attract the dacoit's attention? Honking the horn, perhaps?
One might. Won't do any good hoping, though. We need something better. And for that, we're gonna have to creepy crawl the ville and get a closer look at things.
While Doc fretted at the delay, Ryan drove the Hummer in a wide arc to the east of the ville, then around to come in from the north. They found a rare stand of trees by a little stream that ran along the far side of a rise, a couple hundred yards from the farthest outlying house, and stashed the big wag there. The cricket sang. The rumble from the Smokies, almost subliminal, was constant, and seemed, if you concentrated on it for a spell, to be growing. Out among the lava flows and grown-over ash drifts, a litter of coyote pups yammered, and their mother yipped them sternly into silence. As with most of the valley they'd passed through, what looked at first glance like easy rolling land hit lots of pockets and dead ground. The two men were able to slip into the ville without exposing themselves to possible view for more than a few steps at a time. Not that anybody seemed to be looking. They reached the rear of the northernmost hut and hugged it briefly as they looked around. It had been trashed for no visible reason except mean spirits, doors and windows smashed, and a glance inside showed even by the light of the stars and falling moon that filtered in that what simple furnishings it boasted had been wrecked.
Deserted. If it wasn't for all the sounds of partying from the other end of the ville, the whole place would seem dead.
I cannot understand why we have seen no signs of vigilance. Normal prudence would dictate patrols around the settlement, at the very least.
May have escaped your attention, Doc, but these Chi-Chi mechs don't much play by the rules other people do. Even Cold Hearts.
Ryan paused, listening, watching, tasting the wind. The latter task was made more pleasant by the fact that the prevailing breezes blew the stench of the corpse mound, and whatever grotesque defilements and putrefactions might remain to be found in the rest of the ville, away from them. Even with the wind blowing away, they could plainly hear the shrieks of the victims and the uproarious approval of their tormentors.
Besides, they probably left scouts to keep an eye on the defending forces. We know they sent somebody back that way, obviously. So they know the Scabbies and Hector's mob were a lot more interested in hunkering down and getting blind and getting their ends wet than pursuing them. And they don't reckon on any danger coming down from the north, because basically, between here and the impassable rad bands and chem storms, they're it.
It wasn't a very tall structure, and it had a flat roof, as did almost all the buildings they'd seen in Valleyville's outside the city.
Give me a hand up.
Looking doubtful, Doc carefully propped his sword stick against the wall. Then he squatted and made a stirrup of his interlaced fingers. Ryan put a boot into it and boosted himself up to seize the projecting end of a roof beam, then clambered up and over the low parapet.
Mind you do not silhouette yourself, lad.
Not bothering to respond, Ryan slithered forward on his belly. The roof consisted of earth spread across the planks of the ceiling. Grass, weeds, and wildflowers grew on it, providing just a touch of additional concealment. Ryan was grateful for anything he could get. But with the moon well past the zenith and no lights in the immediate vicinity, he was near invisible. He reached the far side of the roof, peered cautiously over. Nobody was outside anywhere near him. He took out his monocular and studied the scene. Off across the ville, set back not too far from the plaza where the prisoners were being tortured, a hut was surrounded by Chichimecs. Some seemed to be praying, others simply to be squatting or kneeling. Safe guess, that was where the injured holy child was being cared for. Closer to the roof where Ryan lay, a multi-room hut, the largest he could see in the ville, had a pair of sentries squatting on the roof with long blasters across their bare thighs. Even more intriguing was the motorcycle parked out front. Ryan had spotted it first from his vantage point on the hill. A single Chichimec, whose body seemed to be covered in fur, squatted disconsolately at the rear of the house, holding what was either an M1 carbine or a Ruger Mini 14. He was in darkness, and Ryan couldn't be sure if it had a squared-off forend like the Mini or a rounded one like the M1. Still nearer, off to Ryan's right, maybe 50 yards, a couple more bored Chichimecs stood guard over the door of an unlit hut. Might be worth checking, he thought. But he felt strongly drawn to the hut with the bike. He eased back, then crawled to the rear, flowed over the edge, and let himself lightly down next to Doc.
We proceed?
Uh-huh.
Doc drew his sword stick.
Mind the shine on that.
Indeed.
Doc stooped, rummaged up a handful of dust from the yard, rubbed it along the slim blade to dull it out. Then he stood straight.
Shall we?
They slipped between the dark, blocky huts like splinters of the night itself. Their stealth seemed almost wasted. All of the Chichimecs in evidence were at the plaza, gathered in the vigil around the Holy Child's hut, or standing sentry duty. Without incident, Doc and Ryan reached the back of the hut, just before the house where the motorcycle was parked. Ryan led off along the side wall, holding the Sig Sauer ready in both hands. Where he got to the point he was about to come into view of the guard at the back of the house, he took a step sideways, extended his arms, and squeezed off around. The mutie's head snapped back. He seemed to melt sideways to a pile on the ground. Ryan sidestepped back to the corner of the house, continued to hold his weapon on line while he watched with eyes soft-focused for any sign of reaction. None came. The sentries on the roof seemed to be paying all their attention to the festivities around the bonfire. They had to have been reaching another climax, because there came a fresh crescendo of screams and roar of approval from the crowd. The rear door was unguarded, but closed and locked. The window in back had been boarded shut. Doc grabbed up the dead mutie's Mini 14, eased back the charging handle to confirm a round was chambered, let the spring carry it slowly forward again to seal the breach. Holding the carbine in his left hand, sword stick in the right, Doc nodded to Ryan. The one-eyed man crept to the side of the house and peered around. No one was in sight between the house and the plaza. He slipped silently around the corner, followed by Doc. A yellow blade of light fell from a boarded window of what should be the front room. Signaling Doc to keep lookout, Ryan stole up to it and peered inside.